The Senate debate on the confirmation of John Roberts to be Chief Justice of the United States began earlier today. The debate is expected to last a couple of days, but the outcome is nearly certain. Two-thirds of the 100 senators have already announced that they will vote for Roberts on Thursday. The focus of the debate may turn to the other court vacancy, which will open when Justice Sandra Day O'Connor steps down. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us now here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lynn.
Now, you've been listening to these debates. Tell us what you've been hearing so far.
Well, today's the first day, as you say, first day of debate. The vote is expected perhaps by Thursday morning, and they've divided an hour at a time. In other words, the first hour with the majority Republicans speaking about the nomination, the second hour with the Democrats. Interestingly enough, one of the Democrats who spoke the longest was Patrick Leahy of Vermont, who's a supporter of Judge Roberts. So it's really not opponents and supporters, it's Democrats and Republicans.
Well, we have some of the highlights here, some of the tape, and we'd like to hear from both sides. First, we're going to hear from Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist.
He's thoughtful. He's capable. He's hardworking. He's driven. And John Roberts is a man of integrity. He's honest. He's devoted to his family. These are the qualities we want in the men and women who serve our nation on the high court. They are the qualities that will move America forward.
That was Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist. And I want to remind our callers that we'd love to have you join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Now let's hear what the Democrats have to say. Here's Senator Barbara Mikulski.
Several times I came right up to the threshold because, as I said, there is many magnetic aspects about the Roberts nomination. But at the end of the day, and after careful review, I have too many doubts about his commitment to non-discrimination, the right of privacy, and equal protection under the law. So when my name is called for this nomination, I will vote no.
So, Ken Rudin, what are we? Those are the two sides, pretty much.
Basically, yes. I mean, the Republicans say, look at his resume, look at his qualifications. He's very smart. He's argued before the Supreme Court. There's nothing in his background that should disqualify him. He should be approved, confirmed by the Senate on the merits. Democrats, like Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, said that while he does have a very impressive resume and he's a nice guy, they're concerned about too many things, about issues of choice, about women's, you know, reproductive freedom, about executive power, things like that. Too many questions were not answered by the nominee, and that's why so many Democrats, but not enough Democrats, not many Democrats will be voting no. But it's interesting, again, of the Democrats who have declared so far, at least 13 Democrats, many of them in so-called red states, have already announced that they will vote for John Roberts. So really, the issue is not so much whether he will be confirmed, but by how much of a margin.
Is there a fair amount of frustration, though, on the part of Democrats about the way this has gone down, the fact that they hadn't in any way been able to get Roberts to reveal himself more, that they couldn't really penetrate that defense,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, you heard a lot about that last week. I mean, matter of fact, Patrick Leahy of Vermont, the senior Democrat on Judiciary Committee, also said the same thing, that while he is voting for John Roberts, he thinks he's certainly eminently qualified, he regrets the fact that so many questions were not answered by the nominee.
What about Democrats who will there be consequences for Democrats who vote for Roberts or for those who don't vote for Roberts?
Well, that's a good question. You know, when the Judiciary Committee voted last week, three Democrats voted in favor of John Roberts, including Russ Feingold of Wisconsin. Feingold is perhaps thinking about running for president. He's going to be in New Hampshire this weekend, this Friday and Saturday, perhaps testing the waters for a 2008 presidential campaign. And again, here you have a Democrat supporting Roberts. I don't know what kind of a reception he'll get. It may be a rude reception. It may not be any reception at all. For the most part, how you vote on a Supreme Court nomination may not affect your career, although I'm always reminded by Albert Gore, the father of Al Gore, of course, Albert Gore, the senator from Tennessee, who back in 1969 and 1970 voted against Richard Nixon's nominees of Clement Haynsworth and Harold Carswell, and those were one of the issues that led to his defeat for re-election in 1970.
Yeah. It's just a remarkable contrast between the hearings on this confirmation hearings on this nomination and some of the ones that we've seen in the past, in the recent past.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, we saw, you know, some basically Clarence Thomas went into his 1991 confirmation hearing almost assured of an easy path to the Supreme Court. And then came Anita Hill, and which nobody expected. And the ultimate Senate vote was 52-48. This vote will not be as close. Obviously, we were thinking maybe, you know, 20 votes at most, between 20 and 25 votes against John Roberts. What everybody seems to be looking at and thinking about is what's next. We know that replacing the late William Rehnquist with John Roberts may not be much of a change because you have a conservative Rehnquist, you have a conservative Roberts. But with Sandra Day O'Connor, a moderate swing vote, also announcing her retirement, the next Bush nominee, the next choice to fill that vacancy, that apparently will be where the fight lies.
Right. And it's hard to say right now because we don't have that nominee, obviously. But what is there any way of anticipating what that the tenor of the debate might be?
Well, it's probably Roberts times 100. I guess basically a lot of the liberal groups try to really roll out the opposition to Roberts, saying that he's wrong on choice, wrong on affirmative action, wrong on this and that. A lot of the Democrats did not listen, and they said basically there's not much at stake replacing Rehnquist with Roberts. But again, the O'Connor vote, if you replace O'Connor with a conservative, strong conservative, a lot of senators say that would upset the balance of the court, and that's giving them kind of the jitters.
Let's see if we can get a call here from Aaron, and he's in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi. I was just calling. I live in Wisconsin, and both of my senators, Cole and Feingold, are actually on the Judiciary Committee, both Democrats, and they broke with their party last week to vote in favor of Judge Roberts. And despite my political leaning to the left of center, I actually support their move and just think that this, you know, bitter sort of partisan bickering over whether or not Judge Roberts is qualified is just ridiculous. The man is obviously qualified for the court, and I don't think any nominee should be sunk simply because they're nominated by, you know, a conservative president or by a liberal president on the flip side. And so I just wanted to laud my senators for being thoughtful and deliberative in the process rather than simply partisan and voting in favor of Judge Roberts.
All right. Thanks for your call, Aaron.
Sure. Thank you.
It's a good point Aaron makes, but there is a lot at stake here, Ken Rudin, which accounts for some of that partisan fighting.
Well, again, it is. But I really think that the senators are looking ahead. But, you know, what Aaron just said is what Republicans said regarding the vote on Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer back in when Clinton nominated them to the court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the legal counsel for the ACLU. I mean, certainly a lot of conservative Republicans said this is not exactly where our politics lie, but they thought she was well qualified, you know, eminently qualified, very smart, and there were only 3 votes against her, and they said that the same kind of standards should be used for Bush's nominees this year.
You know, this morning President Bush spoke at a news conference about the factors he would consider in appointing the next nominee, and we have a clip of tape from those comments.
I have interviewed people from in the past and thought about people from all walks of life, and I will put the person in to do the job, but I am mindful that diversity is one of the strengths of the country.
That was President Bush speaking at a news conference this morning. Ken Rudin, what does he mean by diversity? What does that mean?
Well, if you ask Laura Bush, that means naming another woman to the court. Obviously, Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman ever named to the court by President Reagan in 1981, is retiring, and with her gone, there'll be only one woman left, and President Bush should name another woman. There's also the question about maybe perhaps making history by naming the first Latino to the court. There's a lot of interest. Alberto Gonzalez, the attorney general, who's a very close ally of President Bush. A lot of speculation that President Bush would love to send Gonzalez to the court, but President Bush's base, which is still the conservative wing of the Republican Party, says this guy is not a true believer. He's squishy on abortion, is what they think. They say he's not really one of us, and they should really look like another John Roberts, perhaps a Michael Luttig or somebody like that, or Edith Jones, somebody who's conservative.
What are the basis for these criticisms of Gonzalez? What makes him so squishy
for
conservatives?
Well, there was one case in Texas when he was on this Texas Supreme Court, and there was a vote on, I think it was parental notification, and perhaps his ruling or his comments during that case was not as strong as some right-to-lifers would have liked.
President Bush is known for his loyalty, if not for anything else. I mean, and he's always been a strong supporter of Gonzalez. Is it a possibility that he will nominate him, even though there is this pressure coming from the right against
Well,
the Gonzalez
look,
nomination?
It's certainly a possibility, and President Bush is not somebody who is pulled away from controversy and pulled away from withdrawn from pressure. But as I say, President Bush is probably at the lowest part. His poll numbers are the lowest of his presidency, perhaps 40% of the American public. The groups that's still standing by him is the conservative Republican base. And again, if he alienates them with a Gonzalez choice, he may not have anybody left. It's hard to make the case that he will win over moderates and Democrats by picking Gonzalez.
What about a woman? Who are some of the women that were?
Well, there's a bunch. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a lot of the same women who have been on the list for a while. Edith Clement, who was from Louisiana, who was on the list before they picked Judge Roberts. Edith Jones from Texas. Janice Rogers Brown, African American woman from California, who is confirmed to an appellate court seat in a very bitter battle earlier this year. So there are some women, but again, Democrats said that if this is a nominee who will be completely objectionable, under these circumstances, they could mount a filibuster. And I would suspect that if it's somebody like Janice Rogers Brown or Priscilla Owen or somebody like that, there could be a filibuster fight on the Senate floor.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken, we have a clip of tape here also from Senator Arlen Specter at the Senate debate earlier today. He is the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, and this clip might give us a little indication of what we might expect in the next nominee.
The nomination of Judge Roberts to replace Chief Justice Rehnquist may work out to be a substitution of people with about the same judicial approach, although it's far from uncertain exactly how Judge Roberts will rule, but there's no doubt that Justice O'Connor was a swing vote, tipping the scale, and I believe that is a factor to be considered.
That was Senator Arlen Specter. So it sounds like he'd like to maintain the present balance of power on the court.
And that's certainly regarding the Roe versus Wade case. Currently, there is a 6-3 majority for Roe on the court, if Roberts, including Roberts, but if O'Connor leaves and replaced by an anti-Roe conservative, then it could come down to 5-4. Arlen Specter supports women's rights and women's rights to abortion, and he's very fearful that another conservative replacing O'Connor could tip the balance the other way, plus the fact that he mentioned that this morning as well, that John Paul Stevens is 85 years old, and while he appears to be in good health, again, he's another pro-Roe possible retiree that could be succeeded by an anti-Roe conservative by the Bush court.
All right, let's see if we can get a call in here. Justin in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Justin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Actually, I was just wondering if there were any Republican Judiciary Committee members or anybody that had come out against Roberts' confirmation and for what reasons they were giving, because so far all I have heard is Democrats and their support or not support for the Roberts' confirmation.
Justin, the reason you've only heard Democrats is because there's not a single Republican who has announced any kind of opposition to the Roberts nomination. The person we were watching on Judiciary was Arlen Specter himself, who is, you know, independent and certainly capable of surprising people. But he, even though he's an abortion rights supporter, he said that Roberts is the right guy and he's a perfect choice for it. In the full Senate, everybody's looking at Lincoln Chafee, the maverick Republican from Rhode Island, who's certainly a liberal Republican. But again, he faces a very strong conservative challenge in next year's Republican primary. He may not want to irk whatever conservative support he has by voting against Roberts. It looks like all 55 Republicans will be in the Roberts column.
All right. Thanks for your call, Justin.
Thank you.
When do you think we're going to get the next nominee?
Well, we expect a vote on Roberts either late Wednesday night, although Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, said, please not before Thursday morning. So we're expecting maybe Thursday morning, and there could be a presidential announcement almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah. Now, the last time, before Roberts was nominated, you saw both sides gearing up with advertising. Is the same thing, we're going to see the same kind of thing going on before this?
Well, remember, when when President Bush first named John Roberts, that was to succeed O'Connor at the time. And again, both sides were gearing up. They had spent a long time. They spent, you know, 10, 12 years before the since the last Supreme Court nomination, and they were gearing up to this with fundraising and all that stuff. So I would think that given the fact how important historically Justice O'Connor is in the balance of the court, the person who succeeds her will be even a more opportunity to shape the court in Bush's favor. And I think you'll see a tremendous effort on both sides, millions of dollars raised to either oppose or support the nominee.
And do you think the next nominee is likely to cause more consternation for Democrats than Judge Roberts did?
Well, yes, of course, it could cause consternation if it's Berto Gonzalez for the Republicans. But my guess is that given the fact that Bush is a conservative president, he's not about to name the legal counsel to the ACLU, to the Supreme Court, I expect a conservative nominee. And again, if it's replacing O'Connor, if it's somebody more to the right, then O'Connor, then you will get a fight from the left.
And how historic is this, Ken? Just put this in historical perspective, the two nominations coming, these two new members of the Supreme Court coming out at the same time.
Well, I mean, it has happened in history. In 1957, you had two vacancies. There have been two vacancies before. But given the fact that the country seems split more than ever, you had two very close presidential elections in a row. You have a Senate very, very close, a House very close, and a Supreme Court, as we saw in the Bush versus Gore decision, very close. Everything's at stake in here.
Okay. Thanks so much, Ken.
Thanks, Lynn.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin. Talk of the Nation is produced by Becky Vlamis, Setsuko Sato, Megan Moline, John Haas, Elise Thatcher, Odette Youssef, Megan Williams, and Susanna George. Gwen Oten directs the program. Sarah Handel is our production assistant. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones, and she gets engineering help from Michael Schweppe. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Talk of the Nation's senior producer is Carlene Watson. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.